After we spoke at the party, I did some reading up about your HBO Mayor of Yonkers character. Is that still,
Yeah, we shoot that till the end of January.
And that's going to be, what is it, six episodes?
Six episodes, yeah, just a six-episode miniseries.
Okay.
Six-episode arc.
Well, what a dynamic guy. Nick, how did I, tell me how to pronounce it. Nick Wasisko?
That's it, yeah, Wasisko.
Because it's got a, it's, do I have the spelling right?
W-A-S-I-C-S-K-O, yeah. C-S-K-O, yeah, it's
makes
Polish.
You think you should say Wasisko.
Wasisko, yeah, but no, it's pronounced Wasisko.
And really sad, man.
Very.
Not to give away the whole thing.
Of course, but no, it was a very sad and very, very intense story, and a lot of the people, including his wife, are still in Yonkers, and I've spoken to them, and and it's a very amazing story, and really a microcosm of the bigger situation in this country about, you know, the way that politics and race, you know, bat up against each other. So, yeah, a very little known story, but I'm really excited about the way it's coming together.
Interesting, isn't it, about how racial barriers, racial delineations, people even getting into it, it's really something that belongs to the past. It belongs to boomers, that generation, to somewhat less extent, but still there with Gen X. But my kids, 25, 26, it's not even in their consciousness.
Segregation?
As far as having any kind of issues, any kind of stoppers. I just don't, you know, don't think culturally that the millennials, is what I'm sensing, is that it just doesn't have, it just doesn't cut any ice with those guys.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know about that. I don't know about that because I think...
I'm idealizing my...
maybe a little bit because, you know, this story, this was in the late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
And what this story, a federal court found that the city of Yonkers had purposefully segregated by keeping 90% of the minority population in 1 square mile of the city. And then they said you have to build low-income housing in the east part of town, which is the white part of town, and the city went fucking crazy. And almost tore itself apart. I mean, it went to the edge of bankruptcy because they refused to follow the court order. And the reason that happened in the first place was because it was desegregating schools, and they quickly found out, well, you can't really desegregate a school if you don't desegregate the city because people go to school where they live. So the fact that, and that happened not that long ago. And I think that it's all around still in lots of ways. It's just much more hidden, and you don't realize that that it's actually connected to a bunch of greater things. And it's more about the system and the way the system works. I mean, you go to a lot of cities across the country are incredibly segregated. This city's segregated, you know, and the reasons for that are many and difficult. But just because it doesn't seem overt, I wouldn't say it means that it's gone in any way.
Well, but then millennials are not really running things. They're just...
Right, existing, it's living.
What I mean is, I think when they get in positions of running things, I think it's going to be a different...
Well, I hope so. Yeah, I hope, you know, and that's... And part of the reason why these stories are coming up is in order to change the way these things are.
I finally locked onto an idea, man. That one of my favorite scenes that you do in Final Year is the... class,
mm-hmm. you know, with the salesman,
with the young, yeah. And I love the way there's a moment where one guy is amused
mm-hmm.
by something, and you know, grin, and he said, "This is not funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to close." And of course, that reminded me of the legendary phrase from Glenn Ross: "Always be closing."
Yeah.
And I was just, then I finally realized that that great pitch piece, that, which is not frenetic, it's calm, it's centered, it's kind of Zen quality.
Yeah.
The way, particularly the thing about eye contact. And it's the best salesman's pitch speech that I think I've ever seen in a dramatic context since Ricky Roma's big
yeah,
in Glengarry. Remember that
Of
thing?
Course.
Chinese restaurant.
Of course, with Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah.
Amazing woman, yeah. Well,
but it's equal to that.
Wow,
that
well, I appreciate you saying that so much. Yeah, it's an iconic moment in that movie, too, in Glengarry. Yeah, it's It's funny because, you know, in that little section of the funny part, it was there originally, and then it got removed because, you know, we were figuring out what was needed, what was important, and then I remember being
the
like,
whole
no,
scene did?
No, that section about the funny part.
Oh, the fun.
You know, because it's a long monologue to have in the middle of a movie, so, you know, when we were getting ready to do it, we weren't sure, is this too much? Are we saying too much? What doesn't need to be there? And I remember when I got the new pages and that funny part was out, I was like, if you cut out anything else, don't cut that part out, because that's actually the whole point of what he's saying. And it's a great shift, because when I saw it for the first time last week with the audience, they all were laughing as well, because he does the stare. He starts staring at people in the eyes, and it's actually quite kind of silly almost. It's a little goofy, and you think that maybe he's making, you know, because he's been kind of funny and light at the beginning of the speech. And then the switch that happens, I think that's why that's particularly interesting, is because suddenly it's not light anymore, and you realize how much he cares. Because he's not someone that's just detached and cold and calculating. He's very calculating, but he runs very hot, and he's very attached, and he's an emotional man. I think JC did an amazing job in writing that.
And you invest in him at that point. You know that he's got the strength,
yeah,
the character. You know he's got an extra thing going on. So you start to realize, okay, this guy, he's probably got enough to get through this.
Yeah,
I hope he does.
The next hour and a half. Yeah, he's got enough to get
but
through.
But you don't, you know. But that's when you realize, okay.
I agree. That's kind of where he ignites as a person.
Which is why I'm astonished that they were even thinking about taking that out, because that's the whole anchor of the beginning. That's it sells you. Well, it gives you a relaxing feeling.
I think that is what's amazing about making movies. You know, you know, it's like you go, you come up with your instincts, and suddenly you think about it, and that changes, and you, sometimes you don't know. You don't know where you are, you know, and that's why luck plays such a great factor in how movies come out. You know, you never know what piece is important, and you just go with your instinct. And that was one where I was like, your instinct, JC, when you wrote that, I think that's spot on, and we need to have that back in there. And it's a great piece of writing, you know.
It's like the line that Napoleon said about a general being that this guy is brilliant, he's a strategist like you've never seen. And Napoleon said, yeah, you know, that's very good. He's a good strategist, but is he lucky?
Yeah.
Say that about acting. You're very talented, but are you lucky?
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, that's...
Have things fallen? Do you have something kind of charm thing about you?
I've been... No, absolutely. I mean, I'd rather be lucky than talented. and I think that's been a lot of it, you know? You just, you know, like this movie as well, you know? Yeah. I mean, how... I can't remember really how many great leading roles where the character himself is a Latin man, and you know, there hasn't been that many. You know, I mean, I remember Javier and Before Night Falls, and you know, there's a few here and there. Damien Bashir, that was a great one as well.
Yeah.
But to be able to have one and to be given the chance to play a role like this, I mean, it was very fortunate.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I just blanked out. I was thinking. Oh yeah, the second thing that happens in terms of your characters is that people think that this guy's strong and organized and focused enough to negotiate this very treacherous path on which he has been set by these attacks on his company and the stealing of trucks and whatnot. And then, but it's essentially one of character and cerebral focus and or, you know, organizational principles, you know, kind of a head up thing, neck up thing. Mm. And yet Jessica Chastain's plugging the deer with the 3-4 bullets, that's a gut thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, that's the dichotomy you see, you know, she's not as highly evolved.
Right. Yeah.
But there's an impact element. You know?
Yeah.
And so that's the thing between the two of you.
Certainly,
fascinating.
Yeah. That's really well
marriage
said.
Marriage from hell.
That's really well said. Yeah, yeah. Born in hell, that marriage. It's true. She is it. And what's amazing about Jessica is that she embraced that. You know, she embraced that. You know, that she thinks she's... much smarter, and the character thinks she's much smarter than she really is, you know. And I think that's what's so fun for the audience, because, you know, you see him say, don't don't do this, don't get a gun. You don't really know why he's saying that. You're like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you protect your family? You know, and then the deer happens, and the day that I saw it, everyone clapped when she shot the deer. And, you know, there's this, like, release of finally someone's doing something. And then it's not till the next scene where he says, you think this is going to protect you? Do you know how stupid that is? You know what happens if you get caught with this? If the police find this? Mm-hmm. It's over. Everything. It's over. Yeah. Take the kids, they'll take everything. It's exactly what they want. Right. It's the stupidest thing you could do. And suddenly, I think as an audience member, you realize, oh, you see that his genius is not, he is not great with numbers. He's not great with real estate. His is the confidence in the vision, right? He's a long distance runner. You know,
what's so striking about Most Violent Year, it actually deals in the way the world is actually structured. There are laws, certain consequences do kick in if you take out a gun and start shooting people on Major Deegan or whatever that thing is happening.
Right, exactly.
They said, by the way, that the toll booth initially when you go through was the same one that they used in The Godfather. Which was, I always thought that struck me as, that was out in the field somewhere.
Yeah, there was fields. You know, I think it's changed a lot. I wasn't.
Right?
Yeah. But I forget exactly which one that is. I think it's down by Staten Island, maybe.
Or, okay.
I'm not exactly sure, but yeah.
So the, thought about the wonderful car chase sequence, which the truck chasing sequence. Which is, and I think JC was telling me a little bit about it, having taken, how many days did you guys?
That.
It looked like a lot of work to get that.
That was, I guess when you count the, if you count the subway, you know, the car stuff was a couple days, the subway was a day, and then we did some additional shooting. So yeah, it was, you know, a good week of putting that thing together, I'd say.
And to think that they hired a production designer to graffitiize the subway cars just in the right way.
Well, you know what?
That was a challenge.
That's actually VFX, because we had an old school subway car. You know, it's basically from the museum. So they said you can't put any graffiti in it. So that's actually VFX that put it in later.
Really?
All the subway spray painting.
Work. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive, because that's my kind of CG. You don't notice
Well, you don't notice it, and it just adds that it's an amazing tool now that you can do something like that. Because they didn't allow us to spray paint or even fake spray paint, you know?
You know, it's funny, when something disappears, you kind of forget what it was like. But I remember, you know, I was there in the early 80s, and I remember the whole thing. And the, was it Giuliani's regime when it all stopped? When did it go away?
Yeah, I think that's when it really started shifting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was at the edge of bankruptcy. You know, it was like Detroit is. That's where it was.
Right.
You know, the federal government had turned its back on the city as well, and it was just kind of like, you're on your own, guys.
Yeah.
And that's what's amazing about JC choosing this time, because when everyone was leaving, when, you know, it was a mass recession of people, this guy's saying, no, we're going forward. We're going to buy here. We're going to get bigger here. And, you know, and again, that's the interesting thing about this character's long view vision. At the same time, he doesn't shy away from the slightly more sociopathic aspects of how many hyper-capitalists are. You know, you see humans as commodities, and he does as well. You know, he believes in his kid, Julian, that Elias Gabel plays. Great performance. And until he crosses a certain line, and once he does that, he's completely expendable.
Looking back on last year, my view about Llewyn Davis was always that I've always had a grin on my face watching it. I watched it about 6 times on Blu-ray, and it gets a little bit funnier every time.
Good, yeah.
Now, that's not the conventional view, as I understand. Would that be your assessment? Because
I think it's
a very dry comedy.
I think it's a comedy as well. And that's, we laughed so much making it. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, I saw it by myself. And so, you know, and I was like, I remember we really laughed a lot, but it's very sad. But, and then I saw it a second time, and then all of a sudden all that came back for me. And I was like, yeah, you see, there it is. It is. It's very dry. But I agree with you. I think it's a very funny movie.
I realized it was that they were essentially doing their comedic thing, but I think when it happened for me, I was when the army guy heading back to Fort Dix is eating the cereal, and then he's slurping
it,
really laughing. And I love it. That's what the Coens, and what your thing is, you didn't do a big reaction thing.
Right.
Okay, I'm waiting for him to finish slurping.
And then he says, sort of, where do they plug you in somewhere? He's such a robot. You know?
Anyway, I could watch that. That and Serious Man I could watch over and over again.
Me too. They're very rich movies, you know, each time you see it. It was the same thing with the script. Every time I would read it, it was like this little piece of literature. Mm. Just dig more out of it.
Mm. So what's going to happen after these two? Do you have anything in the...
Yeah, well, you know, obviously doing the HBO one we spoke of, Ex Machina is coming out. You know, I did Star Wars, finished that. That'll be in Christmas.
You're not allowed to talk about that.
No, no, I can just say that I'm in it.
Can you give me a numerical, kind of a vague scale, how decisive or strong is your role? I mean, can you compare it to another role in, say, Empire Strikes Back? Lando Calrissian?
I can't say much about it. I can't say anything about the character at all.
Yeah.
But I can just say that the way that JJ has shot the thing, he did it with so much integrity. He shot it on film, a lot of practical sets. And I know that can seem like who cares, but there's just something about the reality of that, you know. I think it's a very ephemeral thing, making movies, and to be able to capture a spirit is very important. And I think that the spirit of this thing is really beautiful.
And he wanted to get away from doing a big green screen thing like Lucas did, right? A little more tactile.
Yeah, he wanted to be a little more tactile, just a little more infused with life, a little messier.
Okay. All right, man.
All right. Well, it was great talking to you. Thank you.
Do it again sometime.
Yeah. I hope so. Yeah.